this we rarely get to do Bava Basra. It's hard to do Bava Basra and not to do Cheskes HaBatin, which is obviously much more of a, let's say, a broader kind of a Shas Perek. So we will try to switch over at some point. I just haven't figured out, you know, since I'm always wrong in my time projections, I assume that's, you know, going to be wrong if I do it now too. So I'll just wait a little bit till I make the projection. But we're going to start with some topics in Hashutfin. Hashutfin and Leachbar are very rich prakim. You could really spend a lot of time, you know, just examining and exploring those topics. But I feel it would be a little remiss, since this is people, this is the opportunity for many, you know, to learn Bava Basra B'Iyun. So we definitely will switch to Cheskes HaBatin. But as I say, I haven't figured out exactly. I know which, you know, I want to get certain topics in the beginning. And at that point, we will, you know, try to make the switch. Okay, in terms of Svarim, before we start, I'll tell you what I know, and then you can tell me or ask me what I don't cover, or if there's any, you know, additional issues. So Bava Basra is a very rich Masechta, obviously, in that, let's say, unlike Psachim or some of the other Limudim, you really have the full range of Chachmei Sfarad. So you have, you know, the Ramban, of course, is very crucial, but the Rajba. You also have Rabbeinu Yonah, and you have, of course, the Ritva, the Chidushi Haran, and, of course, Nebuchadnezzar Yosef in the back. So you really have a lot of Chachmei Sfarad. I could tell you the secret already, at least it's my strong impression, and that is that there is a very interesting, I think not well-known relationship between the Ran and, I'm sorry, between Rabbeinu Yonah and the Rajba. The Rajba, who is the Talmud of the Ramban, in my opinion, is also hugely impacted, and especially in Bava Basra, by Rabbeinu Yonah. So Elios Rabbeinu Yonah, which is a safer to have access to anyways. Very important shita in the Masechta, is also just crucial in understanding the development or evolution of doctrines. And again, if, you know, we'll see if it bears out, but that has been my very strong experience. And you know, just like I've said in the past, where the Ra'ah is like a foundation for the Ritva, you know, people assume, like, you know, it was, you know, Ramban, Rajba, Ritva. To some extent, you know, in terms of prominence and in terms of you know, generations, that's true. But it really is much more complicated than that. There's Rabbeinu Yonah's also impact on the Rajba, and there is, you know, the Ra'ah and the Rajba, and then the Ritva is a Talmud of the Ra'ah and the Rajba, but even more of the Ra'ah than the Rajba. It's helpful to know these things, even though that's not spelled out and it's not well known, and it's my impression. But it's, once you know it, it can help you, you know, both reconstruct and, you know, also just see things that otherwise you would miss. That's, you know, something to share in advance. Just as Bava Basra, of course, so Bava Basra is a really good place to do that. Again, we're not, you know, our main focus is not the history or the development of the halacha in a broader way here, although we're always interested in that as well. But in terms of the specific shitos, both phenomenologically, meaning, you know, how, you know, the Masora moves and develops, you know, from generation to generation. That's just a fascinating, you know, window, you know, to glimpse into. But also in terms of the actual shitos, it can be very, very helpful to know that. And by the same token, of course, Bava Basra, together with Shavuos, which some of you had the opportunity to learn a couple of years back, you know, interchangeably with Masechet Sukkah, as I recall. So Shavuos and Bava Basra both have the Rimigash. And that, of course, is it's a little bit different. The Rimigash on Shavuos is a almost like a Rashi type, you know, commentary. In other words, you know, on the lines, you know, line after line. See, Tani's here. Boy, I haven't seen him in person in like years, right? So the Rimigashan Shavuos kind of reads as a perush on the Gemara. The Rimigashan Bavasra, interestingly, is more, you know, has that aspect too, but definitely more of a Im Tomar V'yesh Lomar, you know, kind of dimension to it. But either way, again, the impact of the Rimigash on the worldview of the Rambam, you know, is something that also you should be just, you know, aware of. So both the Chiddush of the Rimigash in its own right and the fact that he, you know, plays that role is important. Also the Yad Ramah. Again, the Yad Ramah we have in Sanhedrin and Baal Basra. In Sanhedrin, it's like a very obvious, innovative Perush, or at least singular Perush. In Baal Basra, it's much more verbose. I don't know why. You have to kind of dig into it a lot more to extract what is unique. But again, the Ramah represents kind of a transitional shita, you know, pre-Ramban, you know, but from that part of the world. And again, just so you have the Rimigash and you have, you know, the Ramah, you know, you kind of have Muslim Spain, Christian Spain, and then the Beis Medrash of the Ramban. So it just, you know, you should have access, of course, to basically Rabbi Yonah, the Rimigash, and the Ramah. You know, in addition to, of course, the regular Ramban, Rajba, Ritva. I think in those books they put out, they probably have everything. Somebody showed me one in the summer. Who showed it to me? I remember. You showed it to me. The one with the, and they also tell you, yeah, that was the one. Made an impression. They even let you, they took all the fun out of it so you don't have to guess, you know, where they begin. What can you do? Try to ignore it. So I think they have all these things, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But you should be aware, it's important to know what Sfarim are so you can use them better. There is, of course, also a Shita Mugubetzes on Baal Basra, which is not as, let's say, sparse as the one on Bava Kamma, but also not as expansive as Ksuvis, certainly Ksuvis, and not even Bava Metzia. It does have some things there that, you know, it has a lot of these, you know, things that we just spoke about. But again, it has here and there things that don't appear elsewhere, including Shita Mugubetzes era material. But what's particularly important about it is, again, methodologically, just again, an interesting question, and that is, you know, when you learn a sugya, so, you know, you know, there are two ways that you could do it, and there's no right and there's no wrong, you know, but sometimes there are different impressions, you know, as a consequence. You know, one way is, you know, each, you know, small, you know, block, you know, to get all the perushim, or to see perushim consecutively. You read a line in the Gemara, and then you read, you know, take out the Shidduch Gobetzes, and you're getting, you know, a range of views weighing in, to do this more, on that line. And there's a certain advantage in that in terms of the juxtaposition, you know, the comparison and the contrast, and that is immediate. Of course, you know, if you learn, if you take the Kiddushei Ramban separately, or the Rajba, or the Rabbeinu Yonah, any of them, you know, so the advantage to that is you're seeing a holistic, you know, perspective of one shita on the whole sugya. So those are two, you know, different, in a way, people don't think of it this way, but those are two kind of different approaches. So it's good to have the Shita Mugubetzes and to use it, and it's also good to have individual Rishon. Of course, there are also, you know, material that appears in Shita Mugubetzes doesn't appear, you know, in some of the other shitos. There are also gaps in the Shita Mekubetzes, with even in the positions that it typically quotes, like it can quote, you know, the Ramban on the Sugya and miss a small piece, or the Rajba, etc. So it's important to have access, is what I'm trying to say, to both from a perspective point of view, as well as in terms of tochen. Otherwise, there is also there is a Shitas Kamoi on Bava Basra, which is a bunch of volumes, but certainly the first volume is the one that we would be needing, and that always, you know, contributes, you know, some of the more exotic Rishonim. There is Or Zarua, of course, separately. Or Zarua, there's Ravan, you know, Chachmei Ashkenaz, you know, also weighed in on Bava Basra a lot. Of course, there's a Meiri, but it's important to have access now and then to the Kamayim of Dubai, but at least we'll be making some references to it. There's also a kind of Otzar HaGaonim, you know, that was published on Bava Basra, you know, a couple of years back. In other words, the Levin Otzar HaGaonim didn't include Bava Basra. So, you know, somebody on their own put it out. Of course, you know, as is the current fashion, you know, instead of one volume, you end up with, like, you know, five volumes or something. But I think there's one volume on the first, you know, two prakim, and then another volume on the third parak. I don't know. I'm trying to remember the exact configuration. Again, here and there, it's, you know, it's good to have access to that. Again, the Gaonim, you know, precisely because they're early, so sometimes it can be, you know, an alternative to Rashi, and sometimes, you know, perspectives that, you know, we're just unaware of, different perspectives in the Sugya, you know, opposed to the more trodden and, you know, worked out path, you know, of, you know, Ashkenaz many generations, Sfarad many generations, etc. So that's also something to have access to. And then in terms of the Achronim, again, in any time you do Choshen Mishpat, you know, you should have access to Choshen Mishpat, you know, to the Shach and the Sma, and of course the Ksos and the Nesivos, etc. There's also, you know, the Tziv and, you know, Pnei Yeshua, you know, those Sfarim as well. So that's what I know of. Was there anything else? Is there anything else in the book? Probably a lot of things in the book. Anything else that anybody is interested in bringing up or asking about? Abrami looks like he wants to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say we probably have to go across continental across the seas.
What do we have to do?
Go across the seas to Natan. I
see, that's right. Yeah, that's right. He has, right. Natan sometimes, I think, he told me he's listening.
He is.
So we should, you know, should say hello to Natan as well. but, you know, he has, like, you know, special relationship with the Riyaz Zaken or something. The Riyaz Zaken left in Yerusha or something. You know, his kisveyad. So we'll try to find out. But if there's anything else, you know, that, I don't know, is there a special Tosa Rush on on Bava Basra? There's Tosa Srin on Bava Basra, which is always, wherever there's Tosa Srin, it's exciting. So there's Tosa Srin on Bava Basra, you know, to get into, you know, the Maduros, also very, okay. Is there anything else anybody wanted to ask about? And if not, we'll, you know, we'll begin. Any other Sfarim you wanted to ask about? Josh? Avrami? Asher? No Sefer Abatim on Bava Basra?
What about the part that was lost?
The what?
I think the Nezikin part was lost.
Ah, completely. Whoa. That's sad. I mean, even the Rabbi Blau didn't put out any Sefer Abatim on Nezikin? That you're aware of? None. Okay. Here. And any Rabbi Yosef Engel that we should know about? Wow. Okay. We still have to get back to the Negan, I know. We've been a little derelict. Okay. So let's begin. And okay, so I gave you some marmacomos. Rami, you were you disseminated them. Okay, great. Everybody finished them already? No? Began them? Okay. So we'll assume today that we'll just, you know, kind of do a broader. Maybe we'll just begin, and then we'll take a step back, and then we'll, I guess begin a little more in earnest with the pratim, or continue a little more in earnest with the pratim on Yom Hashem on Sunday. We do have a little bit of a truncated schedule because of the chagim. So how does it work? We have Sunday. We have next week, the whole next week,
yeah.
And that's it before Rosh Hashanah. When is Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is Monday. Probably no school, so. Okay, so we have next week, and we'll try to do something on Rosh Hashanah also. So it doesn't give us so much time. But we can, we can begin, and then we'll hopefully move forward. And then we have the week of Aser Sumei Tshuva. And then we have a break, and then we start, I guess, more. Okay. I'll try to set up already next week some of the meetings, right, with some of the newer people. And, of course, we also want to catch up with everybody else. And, again, it's just to reiterate, it's really good to be in a manageable room and to see the faces and, look forward to getting to know everybody much better. Very exciting Limud Bal Basra. Again, we'll start with Ashud Fim, which deals with, we can start our first topic as a Kriya. But in general, we could call this Nizkei Shcheinim. That's really what it is. And one of the things that we have to investigate is, what that really means. And, whether that just kind of a background and context, in other words, we're dealing with people who, who live in proximity to each other. What impact does that have as opposed to, the regular dinum of Nezek, both in terms of providing like a framework and a different, context, but also in terms of like the, let's say, raising or lowering in a way, raising the sensitivity and lowering the bar of what constitutes either damages or raising responsibility. That's kind of, the issue in a nutshell. We can now move on to Chesed Sabbatim, but that's the question, right? When you have people who live in proximity, so on the pure practical level, there are two things that you could say. Number one, the likelihood, the frequency of encounters, is simply greater. Than if people are spread out, or they have little to do with each other, or they encounter each other only, coincidentally. People encounter each other ubiquitously all the time. So, you just might need a different Shulchan Aruch, for them, in terms of frequency and so on. But the question is, does it go further, than that? Is that, is it just a question of anticipation and cultivating, halachos, that are going to be more efficient, for that kind of a group, right? Or is there really kind of either formally or is that implicit, but within the system, not just pragmatically, on one level pragmatically, but maybe even formally, to people who have that kind of more frequent interaction. And then let's take it a step further. Is it about frequency of interaction, or is it about proximity of residence and dwelling? Those could be two different things. They might be the same, they might not. Do they have, different rules? Again, on a purely pragmatic level, for the reason that we just said, because, they're in constant encounter and interaction. But not only that, but, there are, there's a bigger, the greater sensitivities in addition to being more frequent. And there's also like a, you know, communal, if you will, or quality of life, you know, aspect about, like, ensuring tranquility and a certain quality of life where you live. You know what came to be known, certain circles, secular circles, legal circles, you know, good fences, you know, good neighbors, good fences. You know, what is the halakha's view, you know, on that, both in terms of pure pragmatics, you know, as I say, frequency, likelihood of, you know, exacerbation, but also just in terms of, I say, quality of life. And does it go beyond that? Is it, you know, not just, you know, wise and pragmatic and efficient, you know, but is there a principle that, you know, when, you know, it touches on, you know, community life and quality of life, right, your, you know, how you, you know, cope, you know, in your home, you know, can be, you know, different, can have a different impact on, you know, on your psyche, just on your sense of self and identity, you know, then, you know, than other interactions, you know, that you have. So basically what I'm suggesting is that minakala lakabe, let's take, you know, I think that there are different places to draw the line, but I think that this is the question. You know, basically there are three, you know, ways, you know, to look at, you know, these topics. One way is to, you know, just perceive it as the framework of it, you know, in a purely pragmatic way, even maybe even a quantitative way, like I said before. You know, what basically we're talking about regular interactions and regular obligations and rights. However, frequency, you know, tensions having to do with the pragmatic framework. Yeah, so what I was saying is I think that there can be, you know, three approaches. One is, you know, in which we basically perceive these issues, you know, against the background of regular, you know, dine nezikin, you know, both in terms of the rights, you know, to be protected as well as the obligation, you know, to not inflict nezek on others. Again, what we call harchakas nezakin. And, you know, whatever changes there are, you know, have to do with, as I said before, frequency and, you know, ubiquity, proximity, you know, and so on. In the opposite degree, in the opposite extreme, you know, the suggestion that, you know, we're dealing really with a different type of chiyuv, which doesn't mean that it's completely unrelated, but at least qualitatively and principally, the obligation, let's say, to a neighbor differ, are, you know, elevated. It's not just, you know, that the details are different. You know, it has to do with, again, you know, the question of quality of life and community, you know, maybe a greater personal obligation, you know, to a neighbor, you know, than to, you know, the regular v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, just as, for example, there's a, in Hilchos Tzedakah, right, we find that there's a priority, you know, for people in your community. You know, that self needs to be assessed. Of course, you know, there's aniye mishpachtcha, but there's also aniye, you know, ircha. Again, there could be other reasons for this. But in general, there could be, you know, as an extension of other things, but a more intense, but maybe qualitatively different application of your obligation, your arvus, if you will, you know, to, you know, to a shachet, or, you know, to, you know, the community in which you live. And in between is kind of the idea that, you know, we're not just talking about, you know, the existence of a context, you know, which seemingly, you know, impacts the rules. You know, the context is important, but, you know, not to go so far as to make it, you know, a completely different type of chiyuv or even quality of chiyuv, more, you know, along the lines what I've suggested in the past, and this is going to be an important motif, and that is that, you know, there is, you know, heightened expectations also have the impact sometimes of transforming, you know, the way that we assess behavior and conduct. You know, again, I like often to invoke the example of the Rambam, so I'll just mention it now, but this is obviously very, very important to what we're doing, and that is the Rambam about, you know, Poshea Kemazik, where the idea is that, as we know, the Rambam in Perek Beis of Hilchos Chiras Halacha Gimel, you know, came up with the Kiddush that Poshea, which is the only obligation of a Shomer Chinam, but for Shomer Chinam, Poshea is Kemazik. That's how the Rambam explains that the Pshia of Shomer Chinam applies even to, you know, Avadim and Shtaros and Karkos, even though typically Avadim, Shtaros and Karkos are excluded from, you know, from Dine Shmira, Kiyuve Shmira. The Rambam says that's because Poshea, you know, is Kemazik. That was the Kiddush of the Rambam. And the Ravid strongly disagrees, and some of the poskim, you know, ask very strong questions. The Ravid's famous question is from a Balavimo, right? He says, how can there be a Ptur of Balavimo for Poshea of a Shomer Chinam? There's no Ptur of Balavimo, you know, for a Mazik. So if really Shomer Chinam's Pshia is Hezek, then how can you have such a Ptur? That's the famous question of the Ravid. But, you know, the Achronim ask, you know, other questions. They just simply point out that this doesn't seem to conform with the typical laws or requirements, you know, for Mazik. It's too, we'll discuss this also, Grumma-esque. It's too removed. You know, it's too, it's B'Shem Altase, right? It's a combination of, you know, somebody else's probably actions as well, or something else's actions, so that, you know, just on an objective assessment, when you look at Poshea, it just doesn't really seem to be Kemazik on the scale that we normally weigh, you know, Mazik in general. That's the Nesivos in particular, you know, formulate some of these questions in a very strong way. So my view, without going into so much detail of all of this, is that the Rambam, who holds Poshea as Kemazik, you know, doesn't formulate this halacha in Hilchos Nizkei Mamon or in Hilchos, you know, Chovel, Chovel Mazik. It's in Hilchos Schiros. And that the answer to both questions is that what the Rambam is telling us is that this is a contextual mazik. The fact that a shomer is mekabel achrayus, even a shomer chinam, and the fact, the question is whether these are two different things or not, I'm not sure, but the fact that the owner, that the mafkid relies on the shomer, who has, you know, accepted, you know, responsibility, that, you know, in turn renders, you know, what otherwise would be passive neglect, and it transforms it into, you know, almost, you know, active, you know, mazik. So in a way, we redefine or refine what constitutes hezek, you know, contextually. And what the Rambam really means is that given those two factors, or one factor, you know, given the background or the framework of Hilchos Schiros, of Dine Shomrim, right, we have a, we elevate, you know, the level of responsibility, and we lower, let's say, the threshold for what constitutes Hezek. And for that reason, there is a Ptur Balavimo. I don't want to get into Ptur Balavimo right now. That's a Bamitzia question, second half Bamitzia question, or I guess I'm half kid, so that's the first half. But basically, Balavimo is a tour of some sort, or Afka, of Dine Shmira. So according to the Rambam, we'll tell you that, you know, when there's Balavimo, that undercuts that framework, you know, if you take out the framework, which is propping up and, you know, allowing for the expansion of what otherwise would fall short of Hezek, then, you know, you're back to assessing Hezek, you know, from a Hilchos Niskei Mamon, you know, standpoint. And it simply doesn't qualify for all the reasons that we mentioned. And the same is true, you know, more directly with regard to the Grumma question, right? Absent, you know, the expectation and the commitment, you know, this is a Sheval Tasa. You know, and given the level of reliance and the personal hiskaibus, you know, that kind of recasts it. You know, that this is a question that we've discussed many, many times, and those who have been here will discuss it many more. And that is, you know, what is the gray area between, you know, action, you know, and inaction, between kumbase, you know, and shevaltase. It's not always measured in either direction. You know, 90% of the cases, and I'm making up the number, of course, you know, typically we can, you know, determine what is a kumbase and what is shevaltase, you know, just by, you know, objectively, just by looking at the form. You did an action, you didn't do an action. Right. There are, you know, cases where, you know, you did an action, but the action isn't what's significant, you know. And there are other cases when you refrain from an action, but that, you know, that, you know, act of abstention, if you will, or maybe I should say, that refraining constitutes an abstention, and the connotation of abstention is different than, you know, refraining. So when you act, when you're expected to do something, or it's egregious that you didn't, you know, we can consider that almost not iasia, if you will. We can consider that, you know, in some cases, you know, bittel, you know, by ignoring, I'll give you a Hilchos Tshuva, you know, let's say something about Hilchos Tshuva, right? Example. I would like to point out that the Sefer HaChinuch, when he talks about the mitzvah of Tshuva, so he speaks about Tshuva in broader and more universal, you know, terms. As Chazal point out, you know, the mitzvah of Tshuva is a year-round obligation. You know, you're always obligated to do tshuva. What the makar for tshuva is a different question, but you know, certainly everybody thinks that the obligation of tshuva is lifelong, and it is year round. At the same time, there seems to be evidence that in the period of the Yom of Naraim, that, you know, there is certainly added urgency, but also maybe added stature. You know, the question is how to understand that. So the added urgency part is easy to explain in terms of the stakes. Does that explain sufficiently all of the discrepancies or the, you know, additions or innovations, you know, of the tshuva of Yom HaNaraim? Yeshua Hashem b'himatzo, krov yoso karov, right? Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, you know, that refers to the Yamim Shebein. Rambam paskins this in Hilchos Tshuva, Shebein Rosh Hashanah liYom HaKippurim. Right, it seems like, you know, there are differences in terms of, you know, do you need a tzibur? Is it even even Kol Yachid B'Yachid is has a kind of a haftacha of Kara'u B'Yoso Karov. So there are, according to the Gemara and the Psak and the Rambam, differences. So all those differences are attributable, can be assigned to, you know, the stakes and the urgency. You know, definitely that's possible. The Rambam, in Hilchos Tshuva, mentions the obligation to do tshuva only with respect to Yom Kippur. Right? Yom Kippur is a zman. It's Ketsa, Slicha, Umechila, says the Rambam. L'kol Yachid, L'rab. You have the language down there, just to have a, where's the Perek Beis, Hilchos Tshuva, that, you know, Yom Kippur is Ketsa, Slicha, Umechila, the, you know, the Yachid, L'kol Yachid, L'rabim. And then the Rambam says, L'fikach, there were L'fikach in the Mishnah also. L'fikach, everybody's obligated, you know, to do tshuva on Yom Kippur. You have it? Yeah, go ahead.
Yom Kippur misman tshuva l'kol, l'yachad u'l'rabim, u'kez mechila u'slich u'lisra. L'fikach, hayavim hakol lasas tshuva u'lisvadash b'yom Kippur.
Yeah.
Mitzvahs v'idu yom Kippurim, she'yaz chil me'erev hayom, kodem she'yocha.
Okay, we'll get back to that another point. But so the curious thing, the intriguing thing about this Rambam, which is not well known, I think, I don't even know if it's, you know, widely acknowledged at all, frankly, but is that this is, as far as I know, the only time that the Rambam formulates a chiyuv to do tshuva. As is well known, this part is well known. You know, the Rambam typically, meaning in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Tshuva, Halacha Aleph, you have that, and then in the Koteret, and in Sefer Mitzvot, says what?
So in the Koteret, he says, there's one mitzvah, V'hushi yashiv achoti mechadu l'kmei Hashem b'isvada.
Yeah.
And then in Halacha Aleph, he says, Kisha yaseh tshuva v'yashiv mechadu l'chaim b'isvada.
I like the way you read that. Kisha yaseh tshuva. Good, good cadence, right? Again, kishi yasa tshuva. Chayav lisvados. So if you look again, the koteret is more ambiguous, as is a little bit safer mitzvos. Halacha aleph, you know, is you know, it sounds like the mitzvah of kiddushin practically, right? Or maybe even a little like shechita. So you know, we're already used to the Rambam's very careful use of language, but of course everybody picked up on this, and that is that the Rambam really emphasizes the maisa vidui, or the chiyuv of vidui, right, in the context, you know, of the assumption that you will do tshuva. Again, the koteret is understood by, like, for example, the Mabit, you know, understands in Beis Elokim, I think also Kiryat Sefer, that the koteret means that there are, you know, that it's an integrated mitzvah, tshuva and vidui. But certainly doesn't sound like they in Halacha Aleph. And even if that's what the koteret and Sefer Mitzvot really mean, you know, it's a striking that when it comes to at least Yom Kippur, the Lefikach of the Rambam in Perek Beis, what was that, Halacha Ches? Zion. And Zion, the whole thing was Zion? So the Ches is just about the vidui. Let's just say, what's Ches?
Habidu shenagu bo kol Yisrael is
Aval anachnu chatanu. Yeah, which is also fascinating because that's not the bidui of Perek Aleph Halacha Aleph or Halacha Beis, whatever it is. So that's also relevant. But the bigger point I'm trying to make here is that there, if you look very carefully in the Rambam, it sounds like when it comes to Yom Kippur, that the Rambam, and only there does the Rambam emphasize a chiyuv to do tshuva, actually a little bit downplays the vidui. The vidui is pretty aval anachnu chatanu, that's, you know, pretty general, and the obligation to do tshuva is what is highlighted, as opposed to all the other places where tshuva is assumed, or if you do tshuva is the background, and the emphasis is on the vidui. So the question is why? Like, why should that be? Without going into so much detail about how I understand the vidui and so on, I believe these really are kind of two sides of the same coin. But the Rambam, before he says Lepikach, says that it's Zman, right, it's Roy Lasos Tshuva, and it's Ketz, Slicha, Umechila, right, Liyachid, Olarabin. Correct? So just to highlight it, you know, one step further, the Sefer HaChinuch, you know, counts, that's what I started with a second ago, when he elaborates the mitzvah of tshuva, speaks about tshuva, you know, like the Rambam does, in general. You know, kol shana, kol achayim, you know, etc. Then at the very end of the piece, you know, when he, you know, Kidarko, you know, talks about, you know, when it applies and what the consequences of transgressing are. So in that end, he says that if you, if I don't know if anybody can get it open, what is it, Reish Samach Gimel or something?
I don't know.
That sound right?
I have Shin Samach Dalet.
Shin Samach Dalet? That sounds right too. Maybe Reish Samach Gimel is somebody else. Okay, Shin Samach Dalet. You have the line in the end?
That if you're Aviva?
No, 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 no. Very, very end. He says, and if you're Ovir, it's a very striking line. Around the Echino says, and if you're over and you don't, I'm sorry, if you don't do tshuva in advance of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, then you're mevatel the mitzvah saseh. You have that line? In the very end.
The over al zeh below his vada al chatav yom kippur and shehu yom kavua me'ol and slicha v'kapara v'itel ase zeh.
Yeah.
The oilu l'adam im yom nisplo vidwe.
Oh. So what's striking is, the whole piece, how does the whole piece begin? What does he say? Shin Samach Dalet?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah, go ahead. It's also true. Go ahead. Yeah, it has nothing to do with the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Correct? And what the Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Beis, he says in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Beis. Right? It doesn't say it in Hilchos Shvi'is HaSasar or in Hilchos Avodas Yom Kippurim. Right? It just so happens that Rabbeinu Yonah was of the opinion in Shari Tshuva that there's a separate, independent mitzvah of Tshuva on Yom Kippur. Right? Based on the Pasuk, Lifnei Hashem Titaru. Rabbeinu Yonah remarkably reads... the pasuk. He reads the words "lifnei Hashem titaru," not as they are typically read, which is that it's a kind of haftaka. In other words, if you do all this, then lifnei Hashem titaru. Right? The way Rabbeinu Yonah reads it is a, you know. Lifnei Hashem titaru. It's an imperative. You're obligated to be mistaher lifnei Hashem. That's how Rabbeinu Yonah reads the pasuk. That's his makar. He says it twice in Shari Tshuva. That's the makar for a special mitzvah of doing tshuva in addition to all year round on Yom Nerah or in advance of Yom Kippur. But that's not the view of the Rambam, and it's not the view of the Sefer HaChinuch. Clearly, they think that the tshuva of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you know, is part of an application of the mitzvah of tshuva called shana. Yet, the Rambam says, you know, that there's a chiyuv, lefikach, to do tshuva on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and yet the chinuch concludes this general mitzvah by telling you, it doesn't say, im avar velo, you know, asa tshuva. Right? He says, Avar velo his vada b'tshuva b'rashana b'yom kippurim. One more time? Sorry,
b'yom. The overall zeh velo his vada al-chatav b'yom kippurim shiyom kavua me'ol musnichu b'kapara b'delaskiz.
Oh. So, like, why? And what do you mean, b'tel? In the end of the day, he's not b'tel. He simply squanders, right, the opportunity to do a mitzvah saseh. Not a lav. Right? He didn't violate anything. But I think the answer for both is that, you know, the lefikach of the Rambam and the added line of the chinuch are saying to you, listen, all year round is a mitzvah tshuva. This is part of that mitzvah. You know, but, and you know, you should be doing it. There's an urgency to do it. You know, but the timing, you know, is not particularly determinative. I mean, it's, you know, it's a beginning time. It's not an end time. And therefore, you know, if you ignore it, which is not a good thing, let me make that clear, but what you're ignoring is the opportunity, you know, not just an opportunity, like a gift from the Rabbona Shalom, like an extraordinary thing. I don't get to start rhapsodizing about tshuva now. But as we understand, tshuva is kind of a, that's what the Yerushalmi in Makos says, and all the Mefarshim pick up on it, and each one says it in their own way, Ben Bakai, and of course the Mabit, in his Beis Amokim, and, you know, it's a gift, the Iri and Chibra Tshuva, it's a gift, it's a chesed, because you did something, you know, that from a quid pro quo point of view, you know, you deserve to be punished for. So, and you deserve for it to blight, you know, your character, you know, permanently. It's part of your history. You know, you can't cover it up. How do you ever get rid of it? The ability to get rid of it, to neutralize it, maybe, you know, to turn it into something more innocuous, even to turn it, you know, into a merit, you know, tshuva me'ava, you know, which creates a zechuyos, Gemara in the end of Yomba. That's a remarkable matana. It's a chesed. Yerushalmi says it's like a miracle, Yerushalmi in Makos. So why am I telling you all that? Right, so of course, you know, squandering that opportunity, ignoring that opportunity, is always problematic and offensive, even. However, you know, that, you know, gets magnified, you know, by several factors when it's zman ketzlicho mechila, you know, liyachid ularab. When that's going on, and you don't do it, you know, you haven't just squandered an unbelievable opportunity. What you've really done is you kind of passively, but implicitly, proclaimed, you know, that you reject the matana, or that you don't need it, or you don't want it. It's a slap in the face. You know, it's like receiving the matana and, you know, throwing it back, like Kiton Shomayim, but it's like, you know, a different holiday. So, yeah. So doing that is a statement. It's not just ikiyum haase. You know, I wanted to give you a matana, and you weren't makabel the matana. Okay, it's a bitul, because you're basically saying, I don't believe in this institution. If you believed in the institution and you had any measure of understanding of your own needs or appreciation of the Rabban Shalom's gifts, those are different things. So, in a way, you've done something egregious on all of those fronts. So, you know, so the Rambam says, therefore, I believe that's what the Rambam's saying. There's a chiyuv to do tshuva only on Yom Kippur. You know, normally, tshuva's expected, you know, and, you know, the focus is on vidui. Here, you know, ignoring doing the tshuva is the problem. And that's what the chinuch means. This is a general din of tshuva, but, you know, all year round, you know, it's a kiyum asei, and maybe even a chiyuv. You know, but delaying it is just that. It's not bitol, it's a dechia, or it's an e asiya. But, and that's why he adds that line, you know, when you ignore it now, given what is at stake, or given, you know, the deadline part of it, or both, right, that is a bitol. And therefore it's a din in tshuva, right, not in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur per se, but, right, it's, now why am I telling you all this, aside from the fact that we're, you know, in the season? No, so that's exactly what I'm suggesting about, you know, this other idea. We find it in numerous cases. Again, some years ago we learned Shavuos, we talked about the Chiyub Hagadas Eidos. You know, and Im Lo Yagid V'Nasa Vono, you know, and you bring a karban, you know, again, you might have thought that, you know, what is that Lav Shema? What is that exactly? You know, but again, the more in these cases, and again, they're, you know, it's like you reach a point sometimes, it's like, you know, I always joke about, you know, Reb Chaim's Das, not a joking matter, but, you know, like, every time you encounter Das, you say, oh, but it's a special din of Das. Somebody once said, like, you know, where's the regular Das? You know, everything is Kiddushin, special Das, Gerushin, special Das, you know, Korban, special, like, where's the regular Das? You know, so it's not, I'm not, you know, relative to the bigger picture, you know, typically, just to make it clear, a Sheval Tasa is typically a Sheval Tasa. It's not usually a Kumbah Aseh. But there are exceptions, and typically the common denominator of the exception is the greater urgency, expectation, commitment, greater impact of neglect. Any or all of those can go into, you know, determining, you know, that you are abstaining, you are refusing, you are rejecting, like you're throwing this back in my face, not just you are failing to capitalize. You are squandering, can be lack of, or the absence of capitalizing, and sometimes squandering, I mean, even the word itself, like is squandering passive or is squandering active, right? Yehuda, what do you think? That could be like a summer project, right? Squandering means not doing, or squandering is an active. Just like appearing in the mikdash without a karban, right? That's an absence, that's a passive, or that's, you know, a different kind of an appearance, right? So there are, in, you know, there are things which are inherently kind of on the border, the gray area. I'm just using, you know, English language, you know, to highlight when I say the word squander, you know, etc. But negating, rejecting, as opposed to not taking advantage of, not capitalizing, you know, not, you know, failing, you know, to act. It's a very fine line. And these are factors that come into it. So that's what I'm trying to demonstrate about Hasjuba. And I think if that is the question in Nizke Shomrim of the Rambam, and I think it's the question in Nizke Shchenim, you know, and Harchakas Nezikin, etc., you know, as well. Because from a Grama point, Garmi Grama, you know, point of view, you know, it's not clear, you know, that these are actionable offenses. And if we find that in parallel, right, they are not, like in other contexts, you know, so we have to wonder, you know, what's going on. Moreover, we'll see this as we go forward, even when we apply both the circumstances of applying it, you know, the objective criteria as compared with, you know, what is typically required, those are two different points. But also, even in the application itself, even where we apply, you know, certain dinim, it sometimes doesn't completely conform, right, to, you know, the definition, let's say, you know, of nezek, you know, as we, again, you know, usually encounter it. So those three factors, you know, all seem to reinforce, you know, the question of what exactly are we contending with? Are we contending with a situation in which we're dealing with a typical nezek given, you know, the compensation of certain factors, you know, frequency, ubiquity, you know, level of tension, etc., right? Or are we dealing, you know, with, you know, a different notion, let's say, of mazik, qualitatively? And if so, are there also differences between typical nezek or typical mazik and mazik, which is based on, you know, this expectation, you know, this kind of egregious, you know, kind of behavior, you know, which catapults it or elevates it, you know, etc. Is the elevation, you know, establish it as mazik, given the context, completely? Or does it remain a different kind of a chalos? So these are the questions that we're interested in. These are questions that have to do with, again, you know, how we look at Shchenim and community, and again, the relationship between neighbors, you know, as being something different, or, and just the expectations and the frequency and so on. They also, of course, touch on, you know, how we look at people's, you know, individual rights. For example, if we're talking about Lizkei Shkenim, right, there's also a question of assessing, like, each individual, you know, breach. So again, we're going to start with Hezek Re'iyah. You know, that's just a great example, because there's a question, you know, to what extent we just even view this as concrete enough, and if so, in what way, that it would qualify, you know, as mazik or as nezek. Never mind be actionable, and if so, actionable, you know, in what way. Talk about something very subtle, right? Call it invasion of privacy. Right? What is that, and what does that reflect? Okay. So let's start to get things. You know, you want to come back up? Never mind. Hashutfin Sharatsu. Yeah. Let's start just to get the question on the table, and then we will. Go ahead.
Hashutfin Sharatsu Lasus Makitsa Vachatzer, Bonas Akosal Beemza.
Yeah. So, of course, we'll see in a moment that there's a major debate in the Gemara, right, what this case is. Already, right, there's another issue to think about, and that is, you know, how we look at shutfas, right, in general. Shutfas when it stands, and shutfas, you know, when it breaks up. So that's something to think about. I hope we'll get back to that. But either way, the Mishnah is telling us what? That when there is, you know, an agreement, right, to split property, that there's a requirement of a wall, okay, a fence. Okay, now the question is, what is the nature of that obligation? Okay, go ahead.
Malkum shenargu livnos gavil gazes kvis and levenin bonin hakol kamenin havadina.
Yeah, the quality of the wall, right, becomes an interesting question. We'll discuss that as well. Okay.
The gavil zenos in shlosh tefachim ve zenos in shlosh tefachim ve gazes zenos in tefachim mechza ve zenos in tefachim mechza.
Okay, so these are all the different standards, and again, we'll have to discuss, you know, is this just minhag ha-medina, therefore kind of implicit vischaivus, right? Or is the reason that it's, you know, it may be minhag ha-medina, but again, there are, you know, certain objective standards, you know, that you require in a wall. Can everything be dependent on minhag ha-medina, or, you know, let's say, you know, are the things that, even if it's minhag ha-medina, that would be a tos. Are the thing in either direction, like, you know, either in terms of better quality, let's say, or worse quality? And if so, what does that show about there being different standards, you know, that you have to meet, and different goals for a fence? So we'll have to discuss that. Okay, lefikach.
Lefikach im nafal kosel hamakom v'avonim shel shneihem.
Okay, so that becomes a big issue, which we'll discuss once in mechaveh olav araya, but not for now. Go ahead. Bechem begina.
Bechem begina makom shenagu ligdor mechayv noso. Aval lefikach makom shenagu shlul ligdor ein mechayv noso.
Okay, of course that is very problematic language, as the Gemara points out, because it sounds like there's, you know, a case in the middle. But either way, what's important about already in our thinking is that there is, it seems like there's one standard in the interrelationship of neighbors, former partners in a chatzer, and that might be different in a gina and in a bika. Okay? And we'll have to see. And what about a bias? And what about other things? And again, is it because, you know, just the expectations are different, the interaction, you know, practically are different, or does it have to do, again, with maybe levels of rights and privacy and so on that are different between, let's say, a bias, a chatzer, a gina, like there can be an understanding that even things have to do more fundamentally with your dignity or quality of life, that that expresses itself differently in different settings. That would be a very interesting way of, you know, the halacha reflecting, right, a complex view about that question. Okay. Go ahead.
Elim ratza konis tzoch shalo ubonav eosach chazes mibachotz. L'fikach im nefal akosel hamakam ve'avanim shalo. Im asum yidach shneihem bonis akosel b'emtza ve'osim chazes mikan mikan. L'fikach im nefal akosel hamakam ve'avanim shal shneihem.
Okay, so the l'fikach parts we're going to table for now. Let's just get just to get on the record, and we're going to stop in a minute. Savrua.
Savrua mai mechitza guda. Kiditanya mechitza sakarim shnifritza. Omer lo gedor. Chazer v'nifritza. Omer lo gedor.
Oh, so this is, of course, what we're interested in getting in on the record right away. I mean, again, this case from Kalayim is used only for linguistic purposes, but, you know, it gives us an opportunity, not now, but to discuss a little bit of Garmi and Kalayim, so we'll do that at the right time. But for the moment, all it teaches us linguistically is what? Guda.
Yeah,
so guda means offense. And so basically the implication is that tamadaratsu halaratsu, that if two people split their property, right, it's still their choice. They can elect to build a fence, but you can't impose upon either of them, that they had a chatzer in common. Right? It sounds like you cannot impose upon them, right, to now that they are no longer, you know, common owners. It sounds like it is tolerable, in other words, for there to be a situation where you have two owners and yet you don't need to impose the standard of privacy. Correct? Alma hezek re'ia lav shmei hezek. Okay, that's very important. And of course, this is we now encounter this, the expression itself, which is hezek, you know, re'ia. You might have said, oh, there's a chiyuv to to separate, to, you know, but you don't, but it's put in very stark negative, and the connotation of the word hezek, right, is, at least initially, you know, very important. It sounds like hezek re'ia, for whatever reason, we don't know why, right? But we are encountering a very surprising standard of nezek. Okay, ve'ema.
Ve'ema mai mechitza plugta.
Ve'ema mechitza. Oh, mai, is it mai?
Yeah. Bach has mai.
Oh, okay, great.
Ve'ema mai mechitza plugta. Ve'chsev atim echatza saida.
What does plugta mean?
It's a split in half.
Meaning what it really means is that
when they
choose to split, right? But then the implication is that it's intolerable halakhically for there to be a common, you know, to be an area which is not common to both of them, in which there is no privacy. Okay. Mikivin deratzu.
Mikivin deratzu, bon es akosel bal korchan. Alma hezek ria shmei hezek.
Yeah.
I hachi, hai shiratzu lasus mechitza, shiratzu lachatzos viu aile. So the language is...
It's not a smooth language.
Elamai guda, bon es akosel, bon nosom viu aile.
Okay, so that's the Gemara here, and then later on we'll go through the whole Gemara just go a little more. Bonus akosel b'emta.
Bonus akosel b'emta. Pshita lo tzricha tekadim chad v'rasi l'chavre. Ma'od teima matzi amar le ki esratzai lach ba'avira b'tash mishasa lo esratzai lach. Kamash balan.
Okay. V'hezek ria.
V'hezek ria lash mehezek. Tashma v'chein begina. V'chem gina, he's mechayev him in the gina. So gina shiny, kid Rabbi Abba. Dom Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Asur Adam Lama B'stei Chavera B'shashi Yomedes B'kamoseha.
Okay, let's stop here for a second because we have to stop in a minute. So let me just make the following point. So we have, so far, an important debate whether or not Hezek Re'ia, or we have an important debate whether or not Shudfim who dissolve their partnership are obligated, right, to impose privacy on one another, right, or not. And the Gemara, that's a debate. That's a clear debate, depending on whether you read the Mishnah, that's referring to, you know, Plukta or Guda. And the Gemara characterizes that debate as depending on whether Hezek Re'ia, Shma Hezek, or Lo Shma Hezek. Correct? Okay. Now, I gave you a whole bunch of other Gemaras to look at, which we'll discuss them, I guess, on Sunday. What's interesting about some of them, they also seem to be related to this question of whether or not, you know, there's an obligation to impose barriers or fences, or in other words, to neutralize overlooking, as they sometimes call it in English, or ri'iya. The Gemara doesn't always use the expression, or doesn't always record the debate about hezek ri'iya. That it seems like there are cases where the Gemara just assumes that, you know, there's a need for privacy without articulating it, and without recording or registering a debate. So is that just because, you know, whatever the maskah, there's machlokas, and then you have Gemara's, you know, mikan or lekan, and even if it isn't explicated, it's the same. For example, look at the Gemara for a minute on Daf. We will stop in 1 minute. On Daf, let's say Nun Tes. You see that? We haven't seen it yet. If you didn't, it's fine. But the Mishnah Nun Tes, or is it Nun? Yeah, the Gemara Nun Tes. Let's say for a minute. The Mishnah Nun Ches on the days. As did you see that? Chalona mitzris. Mitzris says that chalona mitzris ain't the chazaka. Ulitzuris yesh al chazaka. We'll have to discuss all these things. Ezui chalona mitzris kol shein rosh shol adam yachal ikanes l'tocha. Fine. Ah. You familiar with the Mishnah or not?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the Mishnah about?
It's about different sizes of windows.
Yeah, I'm saying that that's the cases. What's the real Mishnah about?
If when you have a window where you can see through.
In general, what's the Mishnah about? If a neighbor, these are really crucial questions, right?
Cover up people's.
If a neighbor allows a certain kind of behavior, right, that he might have objected to, or he has the right to object to, Merosh, right, he has the right of refusal or objection, but he doesn't invoke that right. And the question is, can you develop a chazaka on that basis? Now, they can say, listen, I've been going through your property, or I've been doing this, you know, that affects you. You could have objected all along. You didn't, right? So I develop a chazaka. Well, now, what that chazaka is it a heter tashmishim? Is it kind of a kinyan? What exactly is it? Mostly in case of chazaka b'litayna, you would think that's a big machlokas rishonim, which we will pursue. But that's what these Mishnayos are about, right? A does something that B, his neighbor, could object to. He, you know, is silent. And the question is, you know, what are the implications of that going forward? That's one level of it. B, are there certain things I can do that, you know, apparently affect my neighbor, you know, that he can't object to? Okay, so basically it's about gray areas behavior, let's call it, on the, you know, in the interaction between, you know, two neighbors or an owner. It doesn't have to be a neighbor, but okay. So the Mishnah says, right, that chalona mitzris, right, is an example ein lo chazak. Correct? Yeah. Okay, leturis, because that's bigger, yesh lo chazaka. Meaning when the silence, how significant is the silence? That's part of the question. What is the quality or nature of the tashmisha might be the issue also, maybe even separately. Good. So the Gemara, Nun Tesam Aleph, did you see that?
From Rizera.
Chalon Mitzayim Lechazim,
Maishna. Maishna Gabi Sulam Dol Mefarish, Maishna Wechon Mefarish.
Yeah.
So, Mishim de Kavai, if looking at the Seifa.
Okay, the Seifa, yeah, he says the right. The Mishnah, the Shior of what this is, there's a dispute. Okay, good. Amrav Zeira.
Amrav Zeira. Lamata midar amos yesh lo chazaka v'yachol limchos. Lamal miar ba'amos ein lo chazaka v'ein yachol limchos.
So what is that?
That depends on how low down the window is on the house. So if it's really low, then there is a chazaka, and if it's left there, then you can't complain later and have it taken down.
There is a chazaka and the ability to be mocha. Those two things often go, not always, but often go hand in hand. Meaning this is considered to be a significant allowance. You know, you're allowing him something significant, therefore he can build a chazaka on it for the very same reason that you have the right to object. In other words, it constitutes a potential trespass or nezek, and therefore it's also more consequential that you're allowing it or that you're ignoring it. Right? Those things go hand in hand. What's the problem of Lamata Midalad Amos? What happens in Lamata Midalad Amos that makes it a chazaka and any yachal limchos?
That he's visible.
Exactly. The fact that you can spy is too low, a stronger word, I don't know. The fact that you can gaze, the fact that there's no privacy. Okay? Rabbi Lo Yamar.
Rabbi Lo Yamar, afilu lamala mi'arba amos, eino chazaka v'yachal limchos. So you can protest, but
that's also very interesting. You about it. Since we're reading it already, just get it in the record for a minute. Lema.
Lema b'kofen al midas sodom k'mifugi. Demar sabar kofen, demar sabar in kofen. Lo t'puli alma kofen. V'shani hacha d'amr le zinin d'museves sharshifa tutach. V'kayamas v'kachazes.
Oh, meaning what happens if there is, you know, in the way it's structured now, it's not a problem. But it could be a problem, right, if you were to do some artificial, you could make it into a problem, or, you know, you'd have to do a kumbase for it to be a problem, A. B, it isn't a structural problem, right? I'm not sure if those are the two the same things, but they definitely overlap. In that circumstance, is there a problem or not? Okay, and then the Gemara concludes, Ha'ud asa l'kame d'rabami.
Shadr kame d'rabi abba bar mamo. Amrle avid le krebi la.
Okay, good. Now, what's interesting about this Gemara is two things. Number one, the continuation, of course, which we'll see other cases also. There's an interesting debate, you know, about potential ri'iyah, right, which is mechusar maisa, let's say, and isn't part of the structure. But what's also interesting is the Gemara here doesn't record a debate, right? And it also doesn't use the expression hezekriya shmehez. What I'm really saying is, this is one example. If you go, we'll see more on Sunday. This is only a leman damar hezekriya shma hezek, and it's, you know, we know there are both views, and this is aliba to that. Or is it possible that there are different levels and issues, and the kula alma of this is the problem? Okay, that's issue number one. Of course, the second issue, the one that we just pointed to. What about gray area? Yeah. Now, what's also particularly interesting is that the very next Gemara, you look at the Mishnah Haziz. Oh, I really shouldn't do this, right? Okay, I'll stop here for a second. But let me just say, the very next Gemara, which we'll pick up with on Sunday, right, does identify, it's the only other place in addition to our Gemara, that identifies the debate of Hezekriya, Shema Hezek, Alo Shema Hezek, right? It's the case of the Ziz. The Gemara says, I'll just read the line, Lo shanu ela balagag, the balachotzer, balachotzer, but balagag, yachol limchos. Rabbi Yudah Amar, balachotzer, balagag, and yachol limchos. Lema behezek riyah kamifligi? Then the Gemara says in the end that they don't. But here, there's an acknowledged debate about hezek riyah, shema hezek, alo shema hezek, as there is on that base. But there are a whole bunch of other Gemaras where there's no acknowledgement. Right? In addition to that, you have the Mishnah here, Lo yiftach adam lechatzar ashutfin. Pesach is on Mishnah and Samach Amud Aleph. Pesach k'neged Pesach, chalon neged chalon, right? And then you have the Gemara, very important Gemara, key Gemara, right? Go ahead, Menani Mili. Stephen, go ahead. Did you read this one? On Samach Amud Aleph, right after the Gemara.
Oh yeah, Menani Mili. Amar Rabbi Yochanan de Amar Krav, Vayisa Belam Esinav, Vayar Es Yisrael Shulchin Shvatav. Mara, Rosh in Pisre Alem, Kubanam Zelaza. Omar, we in Halalu Shatishra Alem Shina.
Well, very important Gemara, very inspiring Gemara. Okay. So, because it sounds like, I mean, Bilam gave a bracha to Klal Yisrael. The Gemara is saying this is the makar for there being a prohibition, an architectural prohibition. Right? So it's just curious, but the Gemara doesn't say on the base, and the Gemara doesn't say on the Nun Testament base, you know, Minayin. Right? If I said to you, what's the makar of Hezekiah? Sounds like Sama Kamanala. It also sounds like, you know, there's no debate about it. Lo yiftach adam chatzer hashutvin pesach neged pesach v'chalon neged chalon. Right? No one's arguing with that. And there's a makar. And it's a very remarkable makar because it doesn't seem like it should be a makar. It seems like it's a bracha. So how do we understand that as a makar? Why is there no debate? Why is it a makar brought only for this? Why is there no debate? Why sometimes does the Gemara identify the argument? Sometimes they assume, you know, without it being an argument. So I think, again, the short part of the answer is very related to what we've already discussed a little bit. Namely, this whole idea, this is what I've said so far is true about, you know, Nizkei Shcheinim in general, but of course you have to examine, you know, each different application. You know, here we're talking more specifically about Hezekiah that has its own particular dynamic in Kiddushim. You know, you're able to see what goes on in someone else's Kotzer, that's considered Nezek. Like, what does that even mean? Right, and what are the parameters of that? I'm not talking about, you know, Harchokas Nezakin of Shcheinim in a more obvious way, even if it's kind of a grama. Right, there's an added, that's what I meant, there's an added element here. Is this Chepsa Shel Nezek at all? Right? So, but it also seems that, you know, that it is of a particular nature, hence this makar, which I'll elaborate on someday. It also seems that there are different types of scenarios. Like, Argamar is not a case where you do a kumbase, you know, that is prohibited. Argamar is a case where you had shutfus in a chatzer, right? You decide to break up the shutfus, which is perfectly acceptable and value neutral, right? You don't have to be shutfin. Now, the reality is that it's an open area. The question is, are you obligated now, kumbase, to take steps, right, to prevent re'iyah? Right? Is that the same as, you know, you're building a community or you're building a home, and your question is architecturally, you know, are you allowed, you know, to create a problem of Hezekiah? Creating Hezekiah and creating it structurally, you know, is that the same as the obligation to neutralize a mimela, you know, circumstance of Hezekiah? And what about situations in the middle, right, where, you know, you have a certain need, you know, and your need, you know, can also end up challenging, you know, his privacy, right? That's kind of in between. That's kind of the Sulam HaMitzri in other cases. So it's very possible that even the Mandomar Hezek Ria, Lo Shma Hezek, will agree, you know, they can't spy, and we even discussed that. They can't invade someone's privacy. And maybe you'll even agree that you can't create a structure that is conducive to, or maybe that's not the right way to say it, a structure which, from the other party's point of view, makes him vulnerable or psychologically vulnerable, whether you choose or don't choose to spy on him. It's also a very important question. Those may be different, right, than a mimela situation and the question whether you're obligated to remedy financially, or you know, situations, you know, where there's a complicated benefit yet potential, you know, harm to others, you know, etc. So though, you know, where does the argument apply? Where does the makar apply? What are the different levels of hesek reading? Same issue, like, you know, the differences between bias and chatzer and gina and bika, right? How do we understand those as well? Okay, so this is like the bigger question to think about. Of course, part of this has to do with what's the problem of re'iya anyway? Like, what is it? Something that the Ramban is very helpful about, and others as well. And in general, if there is, you know, not just certain technical things, you know, that we might be surprised, but that constitute damage, is there also, this is what I really want to develop, a bigger idea of privacy and dignity, you know, that stands in its own right, and how does that connect with other DNA Torah? Okay, sorry I went way over time, but yeah, you know, typically we always end on time. That's the rule. Well, we'll try. Okay, so looking forward to continuing on Sunday. Try to get through the Marmokomos, but we'll hopefully train some of the issues in the classroom.